This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, it's hour number two rolling along this morning. Glad you could be with us. Again, it is, if you just joined us, it's day one of our NFL previews. AFC East this week. So we'll have the Dolphins, the Jets, and the Patriots later on this week, and then a new division next week, and leading us to the start of the NFL season. I saw somebody tweet, like, yesterday that it's 60 days until the start of the season. Did you see something like that?
I saw 70, but it was an 70? Older tweet. It was an older tweet, but, not too long ago.
It should be 60 because it's 2 months.
Yeah.
So it should be, it's. I think the season starts on like the
Thursday
8th or something.
After Labor Day.
Yeah,
right?
it's like 8th or something. And it was like, okay, we move for the extra days.
Because I think Labor Day feels earlier this year because of where September 1st lies.
Yeah, so I'm going to look it up right now. Where is Labor Day? Labor Day is on the 4th.
Yep.
All right, so the NFL season starts on the 7th.
Oof.
So today's the 10th. So I think, it happened over the weekend. Somebody said 60 days to the start of the football season. So.
It's here.
There you go. Yeah, I never like to, I don't like to discount. I love summer. I've always loved summer. It goes back to when I was a kid and I had summer off. But I do look forward to fall, man. I love the leaves changing and the hoodies coming out and all that stuff.
With how hot it's been here. I can't wait for fall.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
It has been brutal. I mean, we're having triple-digit temperatures every single day. I mean, it's not fun anymore.
Yeah. And it was never fun to begin with.
But.
I've always liked it for high school football, for example. Like, I call high school football games, and week one, it's 1,000 degrees, and I'm boiling in the un-air-conditioned high school press box that's just basically wood planks with a roof on it. And then by the end of the season, I'm freezing to death. Like, it's in the middle of November, it's in the playoffs, and I'm like usually ice cold. So I love that transition. I love that complete transition. So, but all right, back to the Buffalo Bills real quick. That's the team we're focusing on today. It's a day one of our NFL previews. John Scott joining us last hour from Spectrum News One. And I think he said something rather interesting. And I think there were a couple of things that he mentioned. One, it wasn't only the DeMar Hamlin. It was an exhausting season for Buffalo. Now, excuses, it's not meant to be an excuse, but there is an understanding. They went through these storms in upstate New York, which they go through all the time, but they had two that were historic. One that required the team to play a game in Detroit. Another kept them in Chicago a little bit longer. People in the city died because of the storms. You had the DeMar Hamlin situation. But he also said something at the end that sort of brings it all together, which is your window isn't as big as you think. And that is true. We all kind of know that. We always think that a team that's good is going to be good for a while. Now, some are able to do that. The Kansas City Chiefs have been able to do that. They once Patrick Mahomes got the starting job with the Chiefs, they have been the AFC's best team, right? They haven't always gone to the Super Bowl. They haven't always won the Super Bowl, but they have been the AFC's best team. But for the Bills, look at the trajectory that he talked about. They got blown out by Kansas City in the playoffs. Then the very next year, 13 seconds away from beating them, then you're feeling like, okay, we're on to something here, right? We're on to something, but they weren't, right? They weren't. And then last year at 13-3, they just fizzled out down the road. They just fizzled out to a point where they should have been emotionally inspired against the Dolphins to just wipe the Dolphins off the face of the earth with Skylar Thompson at quarterback. They had a lead. They blew it. It ended up being a very, very tight game. Very good on the Dolphins for not giving up and staying in a football game. And that they only won by three. And then Cincinnati just blew them out. And you could sense that there was a deflation in the Bills last year. You could sense that it was all romp, 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 coming to an end. Now, you have to start it all up again because the competition has gotten better. Now you're looking around the league and you're sensing that this is a historic time for the AFC, where we are now seeing the premier teams in the NFL in that conference. And it's going to be tough if you have problems, if you have a distraction, if you aren't on the same page. And you might play well. Here's the tricky part about this. In years past, if you gave me the Bills' best game, I would say they could beat anybody in the league, right? Their best game, they could beat anybody in the league. They might play their best game and not be as good as Cincinnati. They might not be as good as Miami. They might not be as good as Kansas City, right? It's even more for them to go to the Super Bowl. The trajectory for them to get a championship is now harder. It's really harder. That path is really loaded. And like he said, you're going to see it this season because they're going to be playing all of these teams. They're going to be going down in their schedule, and they're going to be playing all of these teams. Obviously, they play the Dolphins. Obviously, they play the Jets. They get four games between those two teams. But they will be playing Jacksonville in London. They will be playing Cincinnati. They will be playing some Philadelphia. They got Philadelphia and Kansas City in back-to-back weeks on their schedule. They will go out to Los Angeles to play the Chargers. And then at the end of the season, they'll be going to Miami to play the Dolphins. And who knows? That could be for the division. Who knows? That could be for number one seed in the AFC. Who knows? Who knows what it's going to be? They could be for nothing. Who knows? But a tougher division, a really tough conference, you better have all your ship together. Everything's going to be flowing in the right direction, because if you don't get it navigated to your port, you're done. You're absolutely done. And that would be sad because, again, I don't think that certain fan bases deserve something. I don't like feeling that way. I always felt that way about players, where people say he deserves a championship. I think you earn it. You don't get it automatically. You shouldn't get it just because you've been in the league a long time. You shouldn't get it just because you were a good player. It's what makes those trophies special. What makes those trophies special is we just don't give them out because we feel bad about a team or a city. Minnesota has every right to go, yeah, before the Bills, it was us. Right, and the Denver Broncos were like, before them, it was us. We had lost four too, and we had lost three of four in pretty embarrassing ways. So don't cry me a river for the Buffalo Bills, because they went to four Super Bowls and lost four straight. There's plenty of teams that had lost and had a period of time where they were the lovable losers in Super Bowl history. Now, obviously, Denver erased that down with two Super Bowls with Elway, a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning, but Minnesota hasn't been able to do that. Minnesota hasn't been able to shake that off. And there are teams in the league who have never won a Super Bowl. There's the Cleveland Browns. How do you think they feel? I mean, they never won a championship. So, yeah, I feel bad for the people of Buffalo who went through that, but there's a generation that has come and gone that does not remember that. They were not alive for that. So I don't want to put them on this sort of lovable loser pedestal, as I just called it. But the reality of it is, when your team is really good, and everything's coming together, and then you see the window, and then the window is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking and shrinking, and you haven't been able to capitalize it on at once. You could talk about running into Mahomes, like we can say for 20 years, teams just ran into Brady. But the reality of it is that it is starting to close a little bit, and you do have it open still, but you better make sure everything is on target. And right now, the Stephon Diggs thing doesn't appear to be on target. What in God's name could he be still upset about? What is his issue? Is his issue with Ken Dorsey, who's calling plays? Is he mad because he's drawing double teams and there's no other threat on the team to warrant him not being double teamed? Meaning we can just double team him because that...
It's not money, right?
It's not money. He got paid a huge amount of money.
Yeah. Unless he thinks he needs to be paid more.
I think it's a role. I think it's the role on the team. I think it's the inability of the team to put a solid
number two
wide receiver two around him. I think that's been the problem. I think... For him, he probably looks and says, look, some of these guys are pretty decent. Gabe Davis is pretty decent. I think they lost Isaiah McKenzie in free agency, but he was on the team last year. Someone like that, where you say, you know what? They're good, but they're not good enough to warrant.
Wasn't it towards the end of the season last year that they, you know, it was almost like a MASH unit out there except for Diggs, and they went and got Cole Beasley back?
They did.
So, I mean, maybe it's that, that's the one area where they're lacking. They're suffering.
Yeah, and so he's probably like, you really need to bring in somebody else, because if my whole existence is to just get double-teamed by defenses so you can throw to Gabe Davis or you can throw to Khalil Shakir or whoever it else is, that's not what I'm here for.
So
I'm
we're
not
worried
getting paid
about
this money to be drawing double teams because we don't have another wide receiver threat on the other side of the ball.
We're worried about
the other
our
side
image,
of the, of
right?
Line, I should say.
We're worried about our image, our stat lines when we're getting closer to the Hall of Fame. That
maybe that's it.
After 5 years out of the league, we go back and like, well, he was a good player, but let's look at the numbers.
Yeah, I know. So is that what we're – yeah. And it's possible, too, that he could see a larger picture of the – there's a squeeze coming, like I just mentioned, where the teams – you know, teams around the AFC are better and better and better. The Bills don't appear to have gotten better, so they're going to have to go out there and win with what they're getting. I mean, they've made an addition or two here or there, like every other team. But they didn't make the big splash. And guess who's been making splashes? Guess who's been swimming in the splash water? The Jets with Aaron Rodgers and the Miami Dolphins. Right? There's already a report going on that Dalvin Cook's agent is saying they're working on a deal with the Jets.
Oh, it's the Jets now?
Right? Yeah. It could have been. It was the Dolphins not that long ago.
Yeah, I think it's.
And that's possible he's throwing that around. That's what agents do. But
especially if he's one, because I think Dalvin Cook wants to go to Miami, so it would make sense to go
to Miami.
Hey, Miami. He's looking at New York now.
Yeah.
Looking about teaming up with Aaron Rodgers.
That's probably what's happening here. But that's where he lands, it's not Buffalo. Like, it's not Buffalo isn't in the conversation for these things. Buffalo isn't in the conversation with these things. And the other teams are starting to realize we can get better. I can't wait till we do the Dolphins later this week. Holy cow, what a team! What a way to build that team. It's crazy what they've been able to do. They've been able to manage money enough to afford all of these great acquisitions. Again, the big question for them is obviously Tua Tagovailoa, but around them is a team that is just phenomenally built. And I guess you can start feeling that, like, man, we're getting squeezed here, and I don't want to get squeezed here to a point where I miss my opportunity to play in the Super Bowl. I left one team that I felt like couldn't. I went to a team that could, and we've come up short. All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb is coming up next. It's Wake Up Call, Sportsman Brady.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sportsman Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What a... idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb. Good Monday to you here on Sports Mapper Radio. Hey, Brett Boone is going to join us in hour three. We'll talk to him, former Mariner and Reds, and he played for a bunch of teams.
That's good.
Yeah, we'll talk to him. That's good. But what is the good of the day?
The good of the day, you know what? I saw a clip over the weekend, and I could not wait to talk to you about it.
Okay.
I thought for sure you were going to bring it up earlier, but I'm glad you didn't.
Okay.
And that is what Ellie De La Cruz did this weekend.
Yes, I know. It was really great.
So pretty much in two pitches, I mean, he gets on base, he gets a base hit, a little single into left center field, nothing too crazy to write home about, your standard base hit. But in two pitches, he stole second, third, and home.
He's toying with everybody now. He's making a mockery of game.
He stole second. There was actually a play made. I mean, the throw wasn't in time. The very next pitch, he steals third because no one's on third base.
Right.
And why would you be? He's so fast that the third baseman couldn't get over there in time and just said, eh. And the catcher didn't make the throw down to third. But apparently, while the catcher is throwing the ball back to the pitcher and the pitcher isn't really keeping an eye on him, Ellie De La Cruz is just slowly walking down the third baseline, and then steals home.
And he steals home.
I mean,
hardly hear anybody steal home.
No, I know.
It's a lost art.
But the fact that you went in one inning, second, third, home, is amazing to me.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. He is so lightning fast. It's crazy.
I'm just waiting for him to steal first now.
Does he have an inside the park home run yet? I want to know. I don't think I would have seen it a million times.
But like I've mentioned before, like we've talked about in the good, the bad, the dumb, that his first hit was a double that he turned into a triple.
Right.
It's a double by anybody else's standards.
I said this I think a week ago. I said, this is the guy, maybe it was before I went on vacation, I can't remember. I said, this is the guy where if you're an infielder, you bobble the ball on a ground ball,
you're done.
Don't even throw it.
We talked about, he had a ball to Jose Abreu, who was like 15 feet behind first base.
Right.
And so Jose Abreu, he fields it cleanly. It's a hard hit ball. It's an awkward position. You know, Jose Abreu was on a knee. He has 15 feet to go. Ellie De La Cruz would have had 90 and still beat him to the bag.
Still beat him in the bag.
So it doesn't matter. Yeah, if you bobble the ball, don't even bother making a play. Just hold on to it.
He's
That's when you hear the rest of the team just say, eat it.
That's right. Just eat it. Don't throw it. Don't bother.
Don't
worry. Because you're going to panic and you're going to throw it over his head and he'll be home.
Yeah.
So don't do it. Just you bobble the
throw
gloves,
it over his head.
Glove.
Yeah, he would be home.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, if you throw if you panic and throw it over the first baseman's head, and the ball's just rolling along,
hitting the wall, down,
hit the wall and rolling up to the outfield, he's gone.
Are there still bullpens on the sidelines, or they've gotten rid of all those?
Yeah,
remember back?
Remember that? Yeah,
yeah. If it hits over there, don't worry about it. Just you know,
ridiculous.
Give it to him.
He's so fast and so good. He's good, man. He's such a joy to watch. We get these guys, and I hope it lasts. I hope he is a megastar for years to come because he's fun, man. He's good for baseball. He's good for baseball. He's electric to watch. You feel like you missed out if you don't see it or watch him or whatever. And it's hard because it's all local, but they gotta start sticking this team on national TV every now.
Yeah.
And
it's a shame that he didn't qualify for the All-Star game. I mean, they tried to get him to do it, do the home run derby. He said no.
No.
Because, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I think he has hit a couple of home runs, but we know that's not his forte.
That's not his forte.
I think what would be more exciting is have someone hit a home run and see how fast he can get around the bases before the ball comes down.
That's true. That's a good idea. That's a good idea. As soon as it's launched, you start running. See what happens. How far can you get before it lands? That's a good point. All right, what's the bat of the day?
He circled the bases four times.
Unbelievable.
I actually have two.
Okay.
Two bads of the day. Because the first one is really, I mean, it's just bad for you.
Me?
You.
Uh-oh.
And that was the story or the news that came out that J.J. Watt was all set to join the Steelers.
I know. Yeah. That's right.
But the reason it's not totally bad because the reason why he didn't join the Steelers, because, you know, we all remember he was, you know, a highly sought after free agent, even though he's old and been injured a lot, you know, still J.J. Watt. But the reason why he didn't join the Steelers or didn't want to really push that was because T.J. was going through his own contract negotiations and he didn't want to interfere.
That's pretty good brotherly love right there.
Because he figured that if he's over there, then they're negotiating for both Watts, and that might hurt TJ in the long run. Which I can understand that. I can get that logic. But, you know, I really wish maybe he held off on the Cardinals and signed after TJ got his contract. That way, you know, we could have had all three Watt brothers on the same team.
I've thought about this many times with players when they want to play with a brother that's in the league or whatever, and I always go, is that good? Is that we do because we automatically think that's awesome.
Yeah,
but is it good? Like, do you want your brother? Like, you're an adult. You're not 15 anymore, and you're not like, you know, giving each other noogies or anything like that. But do you want?
Are there drawbacks to it
where you go? I don't really want my brother here.
Derek and TJ aren't on the same side of the ball.
Right.
So it can work that way because one's offense, one's defense. They're not interfering with each other. I wonder if TJ and JJ, what if there would have been any interfering?
Yeah, like when you're on the defense and it's like one guy's going to be the leader and the other guy's, you know, leader of the defense. The other guy's could be the leader of the defense. And then your brothers, you love each other and maybe they have a different dynamic than other brothers. But I always wonder how much of it.
Yeah, JJ would have to step back because he got to realize it's TJ's team, but can he?
But I agree with you. Like, even as beat up and injured as he'd been, it would have been great.
It would have been fun to see, yeah.
Fun. Hey, I got nothing else. I got a division where I got Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson's now signed. Odell
Deshaun
Beckham's
Watson.
On the Ravens, Deshaun Watson. So I'll take anything I can as a little entertainment value. It's the only thing I got to look forward to is whether or not they can just have a winning season. That's really it.
Yep.
We shall see. But what's the second bad?
The other bad, and I really don't know what to make of this. And I'm curious about your take on it.
Uh-huh.
Wheel of Fortune execs.
Oh, I'm glad you brought this up. I saw this on vacation.
Feel that Vanna White is replaceable.
Yeah, and she wants more money.
She wants more money.
She's been making, okay, please forgive me here because I know it's a big number. But she's been making $3 million for a long time.
Right.
Like, and she says, look, I've been on this thing for a while now. I've been making the same money.
For about 40 years.
I need a raise. I've been making the same money. Can I at least get money? And they're like, yeah, no. How's that? How about that? No. Like,
I'm thinking because Pat Sajak was 70.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's leaving the show. We all know that he's leaving the show. He's being replaced by Ryan Seacrest. Vanna White is 66. And she's been on the show, let's be honest, she's been on the show since it's all his whole life because, I mean, it's hard to think of Wheel of Fortune without Vanna White.
Well, okay, let me ask you this. Let me put it in this context. Remember when Johnny Carson left The Tonight Show?
Yeah.
Jay Leno came in?
Mm-hmm.
Doc Severinsen left?
Yes.
Ed McMahon left?
That's the point I'm getting to.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if the execs were saying, were thinking to themselves, well, Pat Sajak is leaving. You know, Vanna's sure to go, right?
Yeah.
And she's not. She's wanting to renegotiate. She's wanting to say, because let's face it, I mean, she doesn't have a hard job. She works 4 days a month.
I would do this if I was Wheel. I know. If I was Wheel of Fortune, I'd say, look, we're trying to, we're going to do something new here. We're going to have Pat, Ryan's going to take over the show now. We're going in kind of a, we're going to go in this new direction. Vanna, here's $7 million to get out of here. Like, we know you want to still do this, but we're going to give you a lump sum, and we want somebody else. Like,
yeah.
We want, but that
I
might
mean, how do you
up,
fire
you, know,
you can't fire her, right?
Like, if you bring in a 24-year-old model, she's going to get a lawyer in 3 seconds.
Exactly. Yes.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, if they go, oh, we're going to pair up Ryan Seacrest with some hot young Victoria's Secret model,
yep.
she'd be on a phone to a lawyer within a blink
they,
of an eye.
What if they said, we're going to pair Ryan Seacrest up with Livy Dunn?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I'm going to keep it sports related.
Oh, Livy Dunn, yeah.
You know, Livy Dunn now is the new letter turner.
Right. So, yeah, exactly. She'll get a lawyer tomorrow.
Yeah.
If not the second that happens. But I also understand that they might want to do what, like, you see on those late night shows where it's like, when Jay Leno came on, like, the whole set looked different. Like,
yeah, because you have to make it.
Like, was the band director and everything.
Yeah, when Jay Leno came on, he had to make it his own.
He had to make it his own. Does that happen here where Seacrest is not just a host of a thing? He's not trying to get his new thing.
Even moving forward, I mean, when Jay Leno passed the torch and it went to Conan first, Conan made it his own.
That's right.
And then Jimmy Fallon brought the show back to New York and made it his own. And then, you know, look at, I mean, all those late night talk shows, they go in, they put their own stamp on it. And I think that's part of the problem with Jeopardy right now. That Alex Trebek is gone, and, you know, it's still the same set.
And by the way, I think Ryan Seacrest is going to work.
Oh, it
with
will.
This. I think it'll work. I may not. I'm not a huge Ryan Seacrest fan. He's not my.
No, because it's probably because it's shoved
to
down your
my
throat.
Audience. Yeah, that's my thing with Ryan Seacrest is I can't. He must have the greatest agent in Hollywood, because it's like people are like, oh, he's way too busy to do this? Well, we still want him anyway. They're like, yeah, well, he can squeeze you in on Saturday the 13th, and then you'd have to film a whole bunch on the 21st. No, done. We'll do whatever. Like, he must have created his client.
Or could he be made available for $10 million more?
Right, exactly. It's crazy. But I think the audience will be okay with Ryan. All right, we'll continue the good, the bad, and the dumb next.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsmap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we'll continue in the good, the bad, and the dumb. We have the dumb to do, or is we
no,
have
we do.
Bad,
we,
right?
We haven't done a dumb because we had two bads. So, I mean, the dumb could be you and I talking about Ryan Seacrest during the break.
That's true. Before we get to that, we all know about the speed of sound, but you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? If you drive over the speed limit, there are a lot of sounds that you might hear. You could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing, the sound of first responders desperately trying to save you. You can even hear the sound of people crying at a funeral. Because you drive over the speed limit, you could be the danger that is beyond repair. One way or another, speeding catches up to you, paid for by NHTSA. All right, let's get to the dumb of the day.
The dumb of the day? I mean, this one is pretty clear cut because this dumb of the day can only happen at Wimbledon.
Oh, only at Wimbledon.
At Wimbledon, and that's when a judge had to go, ladies and gentlemen, if you're opening a bottle of champagne, don't do it as the players are about to serve.
Oh, that's fantastic. Seriously? They're popping champagne during
apparently,
a tennis match?
Apparently, I'm not sure who it was. There was somebody, it was during a women's match. Potapova, I think is her last name. She was about to serve, and right as the ball's tossed up in the air, you hear pop.
My goodness. That's unbelievable.
Only at Wimbledon.
Only at Wimbledon.
Because I can't.
Sorry, I was popping some champagne. Didn't mean to bother your serve. Ha ha! Pour it, please. Thank you.
Thought this one was going to be a little quieter.
Play on. Didn't mean to look too excited there. But go ahead, play your game. Goodness gracious, Wimbledon!
Fantastic. I mean, I can't think of a more Wimbledon thing. Like, you can't do that. You would never hear that in the Super Bowl, right?
No. course not. I think the whole quiet please thing in golf tournaments and tennis tournaments are really ridiculous.
It really is.
Every now and then you get a golfer that says, I don't need it to be quiet when I'm over a putt talk.
Yeah. Move.
I'm zoned in.
Tennis
is
worse because you just all you hear is, quiet, please.
That's it. Quiet, please.
Quiet, please.
Yeah, and then they start
and they're screaming and grunting. It's like,
screaming,
dude.
Screaming and hollering.
I'm wondering if tennis players at some point go, you know what? Can you guys make some noise to drown out the noise?
Yeah.
Because I sound like I'm doing something else that I'm
How
not.
How come people don't talk or scream and yell during the play?
Like, yeah.
Like, so once the ball is served, do I need to stay quiet during a tennis match?
I guess so. You got to concentrate.
Yeah. I remember when I was at a golf tournament once when I was a kid. And, well, I was probably a teenager. And I remember I was looking down on a piece of paper, and I saw something really interesting on something. It was like the map or something like that or whatever. And I looked up to talk to my father, I think was there. And I you know how you just see, you're focused on something, and then you go, hey, take a look at this.
Yeah.
You know, you do something like that. And as I was going up and just about ready to go, hey, take a... I looked around and I realized everyone was quiet and somebody was putting. And I went, whoa! Like, I pulled it back instantly. And I still remember that thinking, what would it have been like if I was so focused on reading this and did not notice my atmosphere, if I had yelled out as the guy was putting? Would they have kicked me out of the golf tournament?
I was
a split second away from blurting something out without recognizing the atmosphere I was. And I was like, why do I have to do this?
And I know I've told this story before my youngest, or he's my 13-year-old now, or 12-year-old now, but when he was a couple months old, screamed or started crying during Phil Mickelson's putt.
Yeah, that's awesome. You took a baby to the West Management Open.
Yeah.
In Phoenix.
Waste.
That's great.
Waste Management
Open.
Yeah.
What did I say? Paste?
You said West.
Oh, wait. Well, yeah.
It's in the West.
No, I said waste, but I said it fast enough that you...
I don't listen.
That's right.
Have we
but nevertheless, did Mickelson give you a ball and a glove?
No,
and
he just gave me that dad nod.
Yeah, like, I get it.
Like, you know, I was like, yeah, because he saw that I was walking away.
Right.
That I wasn't staying there to, you know, keep it going.
I would have been like, come back. Scream. I don't care. Yeah. I hit a million of these a day. If I can't do it...
That's the thing, right?
Silence,
I mean, when you talk about tennis players, when you talk about golfers, I mean, that's all they do every single day.
Come on, let's be honest. It's muscle memory.
Baseball players do it.
Yeah.
Right?
It's muscle memory. You're lining up a shot. You're focused on the shot. Then you tell your body repeats the motion. You don't need it to be pitch quiet.
No, how about this?
To when do you, that?
In tennis, when you start to get the long rallies, the crowd starts getting into it.
Yeah.
You know, and because you can't help it. And they're not, I don't hear the umpires saying, quiet, they're still in the game. They're still in the rally.
That's right. So, I like Wimbledon. By the way, there were three major things going on in England over the weekend. They had the British Grand Prix, Wimbledon, and then did you know the LIV Golf Tour was playing in London this weekend?
I did when I saw who won it. I didn't know before that.
Oh, no, Cam Smith won.
Cam Smith
right?
won.
See, and I actually had it on. I was flipping through. I did nothing yesterday but watch
Oh,
TV.
Was it televised?
Yeah, it was
CW?
On CW.
CW.
It was on CW. All right, I did not. It was rainy yesterday. I did nothing but watch TV. I watched Raiders of the Lost Ark on Disney Plus.
Nice.
I watched the some of the Bills Cowboys Super Bowl on NFL Network. And then I saw LIV Golf on the CW on the guide. So I went to the guide, hit it, and I was like, I haven't seen a LIV Golf
did
on
you-
TV.
Keep it, did you keep it rolling and have the nightcap of USA versus Canada?
No, I did not.
I kept it on live,
though, just to kind of get a feel for the broadcast. Because, you know, they're all like it looks so casual because they're all in shorts.
Yeah.
And they're all in, like, semi-uniforms. They're all wearing team gear. And it looks a little weird. It looks a little weird. If you have never watched LIV Golf on TV, maybe you've seen some highlights. If you've never watched it on TV, it does have a celebrity pro-am atmosphere to it because of the casualness of it, which I like. But the crowds, there was actually some really good crowds there. They must be all in on this now. That
so
it's like,
when the merger happens, are they going to adopt certain things? Like, is LIV going to go, okay, LIV, I know you like your 54 holes, but we're going to go to 72.
Right, right.
And does LIV go to PGA and go, PGA, I know you like your long pants.
But we got to wear shorts.
But, you know, we understand certain places dictate attire. Like, I know if we do anything at LA Country Club, you can't wear shorts.
Right.
That's just their rule. And, you know, we'll adhere to those. But some of these other courses, I think they can wear shorts at, right?
Sure.
You know, you can see patrons walking around. Or they're not all patrons, fans. They're only patrons at Augusta. Because Augusta, you can't wear shorts, can you?
Yeah. No, you can't wear shorts at Augusta. I don't think you can. I don't know. No, maybe you can in the casual day. I'm not sure.
See, the only one I know that has a strict dress code is LA Country Club, just because we talked about it a few weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
That they have a 1,000-page rule book.
So you know what else I watched yesterday? Netflix. I didn't catch the 30 for 30 version of this, but Netflix has got a documentary on American Gladiators.
Okay.
So I finally popped that thing on yesterday. That was last night. I was watching a bit of that. That was fascinating. I wasn't a big American Gladiators
Which
guy.
Which angle did they talk about the creation of it?
Or were they went through the whole thing. They went through from the very beginning, how it was put together, to getting the American Gladiators, the first Gladiators, and then how their life was on this trajectory where the first season was so bad, they didn't think it would last, but it had popularity. And then the second season, they put more money into it. And then they just became mega stars and they were on tour and filling up arenas. And then some of the issues that were going on behind the scenes. They talked about steroids and accusations of steroids and using steroids. And one, Nitro is like heavily featured in this documentary. He's like, I had to go to Mexico to get steroids. Like, I was not kidding around. I was like, they were going to test me. I didn't care. I needed to keep this physique. It was nearly impossible to do it. And so I did whatever I had to do, and I got I got caught at the border. And he's like, the pressure to keep looking like the way we were looking was too much. You can't get like that at just going to the gym all the time. He's like, we needed to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Hulk Hogan, and like, so he was really honest about those years, and it was nuts. I enjoyed it. They didn't you know what it was? It was, you know how we just talked about earlier this morning, we were talking about the Home Run Derby, and we said people love the idea of it. They just didn't know how the format should be, so they just toyed with the format. The way the American Gladiators was formed in the late 80s, these two guys loved the idea of it so much, but they were like, we'll just play around with it until we get it right. They thought it was like, we'll do these games, and if those aren't good, we'll do another ones. We'll make up more. We'll just keep this going. And, you know, they were like, we're getting tackled on concrete. We're getting knocked out, concussions, left and right. No safety. There's no ambulance nearby.
The one thing I liked was, like, the first season, when they were sitting there going, like, we did the first season, but they were getting men like us.
Yeah, that's right. That's another thing they were saying. Yeah, that's another complaint that they had was, so they wanted the contestants to beat the gladiators occasionally, so they just found people that looked like them, and so they didn't find Dan, you know, the accountant from Sheboygan, Wisconsin, who was like, I don't know, maybe I can beat Malibu in the joust.
I mean, he did, you know, he ran 5Ks.
Right.
That was it.
No, that was it.
They went and got, ex-football players.
Yeah, they were like, you ex-football player, big bulky guy who still spends 10 hours a day at the gym. How'd you like to go up against Nitro over here in the human cannonball?
Yeah, no.
And they were like, no, that's not how this works. All right, wake up call. We'll continue.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. And again, today was day one of our NFL previews. We got three more AFC East teams this week. And if you're new to the show, basically we do a division a week. Then Friday is either a day that we had problems hooking up with somebody as a guest, we can get them on that Friday, or we just wrap up that division. And we do eight of them all the way to the start of the NFL season. So, you know, it's not right around the corner, but it's closer every single day. So as I there's two things in July that I look forward to. You know, July is kind of a dead month. There's three things, I should say. I like the British Open. I've always felt like the Open Championship is always a really fun test of golf. I've always liked it because it was always bad weather. Like I was, I remember like Seve Ballesteros when I was younger, like wearing winter hats and jackets, and the wind would be howling and it would be so cold. I always liked that, but I was always had an affection for the Open Championship. But NFL training camp, and then the other thing that I've started to look forward to over the last maybe 25 years or so, and more, it seems like more and more every year, are media days in college football, especially the SEC media days, because I think it's a circus and it's a zoo. But I always like media days, even if you don't get a lot out of them, and you kind of go. I've been to the Mountain West Conference media days. I've been to SEC media days. You don't get like a bunch of great stuff. You get basically everybody's optimistic view of the season, right? No coach ever goes to media days and goes, "We're going to be awful, awful. It's going to be it's a waste of time for you to
another
even
long
care.
Season for us.
Another long season. We'll be lucky to get 3 wins. I hope you all aren't expecting great things from us because we stink. Our quarterback stinks. Our offensive line stinks. He's probably going to get sacked 50 times this season. We're probably going to throw 30 interceptions. No coach ever says that. They always talk about how great their recruiting class is, how awesome. It's a PR stunt. But here's why I've always liked media days. I like them because, especially in the SEC, because they're crazy about this stuff. There is a feeling as if that's the starting point for now revving up your calendar to college football. Like your coach has spoken about the team. Some players on your team have spoken about the team. They're really starting to put into context what this upcoming season may be. And even if you are a middle-of-the-road conference team, so whether it doesn't matter, Pac-12, SEC, Big Ten, whatever, there you can still hope for a bowl game or hope for a better season than you may have projected. There's always this feeling of this starts it all. Now, what they do in Alabama for the SEC media days is grown insane. It used to go from a bunch of reporters in a hotel lobby talking to coaches or conference room talking to coaches, has now turned into this mega event, a mega, mega, mega event where fans are lined up outside and everybody sort of makes, you know, just trying to make their way inside so they can get a hold of it's become a zoo and it's become a circus. But that's the way they want it, because it's the one event that you could say, look at the attention, look at the exposure, look at everything. People are gobbling up this product. Let's give them as much as they could possibly gobble up. Now, if you go to ACC media days, like usually in Greensboro, North Carolina, or someplace like that, it's not as high up. It's not as big. But where college football is big, it's a tremendous moment because it starts everything going on. Like the Pac-12 media days, for example. You don't think it's going to be a zoo with Deion Sanders there? You don't think more media members who have never gone to a Pac-12 media day aren't going to go now just with Deion Sanders there? Like, of course they are. When Colorado finally moves from that conference, they'll follow him to another place, unless he's gone to another place. But that's the kind of stuff I'm not one that watches every coach and their press conference and analyzes what they say, because they all say pretty cliched stuff. But I will tell you that there is that enthusiasm for the start, just like training camp, same thing. So those things are going on in the month of July, and then we get to April, and then there's preseason games, Hall of Fame game, and you know we really start getting closer and closer. So 8 weeks of NFL previews. We talked about the Buffalo Bills. Man, I want to be optimistic with the Bills. I should be optimistic with the Bills. It's a very talented football team, really talented, 13-3. But I'm a little nervous for them. I'm a little worried for them. I don't know if this upcoming season is if they're going to be closer to their goal of going to a Super Bowl, or if they've taken steps back. And when you take steps back, doesn't mean you can't go to the Super Bowl. The ball can bounce your way. But at the same time, it makes me a little concerned that they don't look better going into this season.
You feel like a golden opportunity is getting away from them.
Yep, that's right.
You know, and to some extent too. I mean, you know, you're looking around these the leagues, the other teams. Like I kind of feel that way with the Ravens. Now maybe it's a change of guard now because you got Lamar Jackson situated,
right?
And you brought in a good weapon. Maybe something happens from that. But I mean, no other team other than the Bills. I mean, it's almost like they're the Packers.
Well,
the Aaron Rodgers years, where they did go to a Super Bowl. They won a Super Bowl, but that was it.
That was it, yeah. I mean, what if Aaron Rodgers with the Jets, what if Aaron Rodgers is great?
Yeah.
Like, what if he's great? Like, all of a sudden, if you're Buffalo, you're like, oh, my God, I got another team within the division that I can't just walk over? I can't, Like, now I'm fighting for my divisional life.
No, because when you think back,
teams that are gonna take this away from us.
When you look back at it, you know, the Patriots' success dealt a lot with the fact that the division was terrible.
Right, right, and that's the Patriots made them terrible. Right?
The Patriots, like,
but most of those teams. That's why I was always mad with those teams. They 20 years they couldn't figure out to be competitive with the Patriots. Think about this for a second. I'm not saying the Bills are like Tom Brady and Belichick and those Patriots.
No.
But let's be honest here. It did not take the Dolphins or the Jets a lot of time to figure out how to be Buffalo, to be near Buffalo. Whereas it took 20 years for teams. Now, don't get me wrong. The Dolphins won the division once, and the Jets beat the Patriots in the playoffs once. So there were times where the Patriots were not the team. But for the most of the 20 years that they were dominating the NFL, they dominated this division in a way that really put the screws to these teams for 20 years. When the Bills took it over, when the Bills became the team to beat, look how quickly the Dolphins turned into a contender. Look how quickly the Jets have figured out a way to get Aaron Rodgers.
Well, we're hoping.
Seeing that, how that goes.
I'm still not a believer in the Jets until I actually see it.
Oh, no doubt. If Aaron Rodgers is not great or he's average, and the Jets will be a middle of the road team.
Yeah,
right.
on paper, they've done the right things.
But they got a lot of young talent. Their defense is ready to pop.
The Dolphins have gone all out, and it is fun to watch.
Extremely
it is amazing
impressive.
To watch.
That's what you're supposed to do in a division. You're supposed to see who the top dog is, and you're supposed to build a team around it so you can take down the top dog, not be its doormat for 2 decades. I got enough of that nonsense.
And if they get Dalvin Cook, I'm afraid for the Bills when the Dolphins can do.
You can make all the arguments you want on the Deshaun Watson contract and bringing Deshaun Watson like Cleveland did. I get it. I understand. We've done this ad nauseum. But what else were the Browns supposed to do?
Right.
Right? Like the Browns were like, we're never going to win this division if Lamar Jackson's in it, and now this Joe Burrow kid's fantastic. Like what?
And the Steelers always seem to be above 500.
And the Steelers don't have losing seasons. How else are we going to be competitive? Like, again, you could argue the merits, and I get it. The accusations and all this stuff on Deshaun Watson is enough to give you a nosebleed if you're a fan, because now you have to deal with that rather than another team dealing with that. But you can almost see the desperation in teams to go, there's not enough of these guys. When there is one to get, I gotta get it, even though it smells like garbage. I have to.
And listen, I mean, Buffalo, we all remember that draft. Buffalo took a chance.
Yep.
And that was not a favorable pick by people.
That's right.
And it's turned out to be that was the best pick in the draft.
Without question. It was a great selection.
I mean, you're looking at it, it's like, okay, yeah, but, you know, the clock's ticking. I mean, it feels like, you know, I feel like it's the Bills are Marissa Tomei.
Yeah.
You know, you know, tick, tick, tick. You know, that scene in My Cousin Vinny where she's talking about her biological
clock is
ticking.
Right. And so you look around and you look how tough that conference is, and then you don't have to go far to look to see where trouble could come from your own division. And I'm telling you, when you don't win the division, you are playing around with all your other good teams, because even though there's an extra wild card, that still can be precarious, where if you're not going to win your division, who else is not going to win their division? And are we as good, or have we beaten the teams that are around the league? Have we beaten the Chargers? If not them, then Kansas City. Have we beaten Cincinnati? If not them, then Baltimore. If not them, then Cleveland. Have we beaten Jacksonville? If not them, is Tennessee good? Like you have to look around to see where you are. It just makes it just drives you crazy. But this is still a very talented football team. This is still a team with Josh Allen. But I think I go back to what John Scott said in our interview in hour one. They averaged nearly 30 points a game. It was like 20, maybe it's 29, 28 point something. They were second in the NFL in scoring, but they never looked easy. It's not Kansas City Chiefs easy. And that is what was troubling last season, that they won 13 games, but later in the year, they didn't make it look easy. And I think that's main reason why Stephon Diggs is probably upset. They don't have an offense that flows naturally from, you know, QB1 to wide receiver one, that it flows sort of clunkily, yet it's still somewhat effective. All right, hour three coming up next. Brett Boone is going to join us, and we'll talk about Major League Baseball, his career, the All-Star Game, and especially the All-Star Game in a city of Seattle, in which he played for the Mariners twice during a season. That's all coming up as we continue.